This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Julian. Now, in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Chan Soon Seng, Program Director with Teach for Malaysia, on the disruption to education and learning resulting from the coronavirus outbreak. Now, we're running a poll as well about this on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio, asking how are children in your family being schooled while schools are closed? Are they being homeschooled by family? Are schools teaching online? Is it self-study or are they just not bothering? Let us know what you think about this. We've had about 30 votes so far. Do let us know what you think. In the meantime, though, we are taking a look at a recent measure announced by Bank Negara Malaysia to give immediate relief for loans. So this is good news for businesses as well as individuals. Bank Negara has instructed banks to grant an automatic six-month moratorium beginning April 1st on all loan and financing payments except for your credit card balance.
Yeah, but there are some conditions behind this. The lender must not be behind payments exceeding 90 days and the loan must be in ringgit.
So bank,
it's the borrower, right? Not the borrower must not be behind payments.
Yes, yeah. And in terms of the credit card facilities as well, while credit card balances aren't covered under this moratorium, there is now the instruction for banks to offer the option to convert credit card balances into a term loan of not more than 3 years with an interest rate of not more than 13% a year. And for those who've been unable to meet their payments for the last three consecutive months, banks will automatically convert this into convert their credit card balance into a term loan.
So this is not really a get out of jail free card for borrowers. It's just that the government is really rallying together. Policymakers are doing that just to help ease this very tight situation in the short term. Otherwise, there would be liquidity crunches and economy is in a risk of collapsing. I think this is like corporatizing that EPF move, right? Because the EPF members are dipping into their retirement funds to just ease the short-term situation. And corporations as well, in a way, they are kicking the can down the road because you're still going to owe the banks interest and principal at the end of 6 months, or however long this moratorium is going to last.
Yeah, it is kicking the can down the road. But I think everyone's focus right now is in the short term. How are we going to weather this period without people losing their jobs, without businesses shuttering? And Bank Negara has come out to strongly encourage banks to facilitate requests for a moratorium by corporate borrowers as well, in a way that would enable viable corporations to preserve jobs and also quickly resume their economic activities once conditions stabilise and improve. So this could include additional financing to support immediate cash flows, as well as the rescheduling and restructuring of existing facilities. And beyond that, I think even some lending and financing requirements have also been liberalised to try and support these activities by the banking institutions. Among them, these include the requirements on lending and financing to the broad property sector.
Yeah, but there is one that allows you to convert credit card debts for outstanding credit card balances.
Yeah, that, there is as well. That was the short term. That was the three year.
I think that's quite dicey, right? Because the credit card interest rate is pretty high. I think Bank Negara has decided to impose a 13% from a normal 18% to 20%. 13% is still by no means cheap.
Absolutely. And Bank Negara has also said that it's going to be providing adequate liquidity for banks during this period. So this is something that we'll be watching very closely. But in addition to this, in some other local concerns, according to the United Nations, food security exists when all people at all times have physical, social and economic access to sufficient amounts of food to meet their dietary needs. But in Malaysia, our food supply depends heavily on imports. So for example, in 2019, Malaysia imported nearly 60 billion ringgit in processed foods, which is a very high figure considering we're a country of only about 32 million people.
Yeah, and we're also 40th in the food security among 113 countries. That's tracked by the Global Food Security Index. So in the event of COVID-19, which is leading to the shutdown and disruption of almost every sector, including the food supply chains, what does this mean for the food industry?
That's a very good question, Julian. And to help us answer this, this morning we have on the line Ko Yuling, independent political economist with Sergi Enam Advisors. Thanks for joining us, Yuling, and good morning. So how much does Malaysia actually rely on imports for food, and how can we lower our food import bill?
Hi, good morning. I've been looking a fair bit at the trade statistics. If we look at last year, Malaysia imported over $13 billion worth of food items. And the biggest ones are really cereals, oils and fats, basically it's to, I guess, make bread and other things like that, and also for animal feed. And, of course, oil and fats is to do with, some of this oil palm trade and transshipments and things like that. So if we take those items out, those are about in excess of $3.5 billion. So, we're talking about, I suppose, other things which are more in the range of about at least $8 billion plus US dollars. So it's quite a lot. There's, food preparation products that we bring in, things to do with cocoa and preparations, fish, meat, vegetables as well. A significant portion is about 12% of value came from China. So obviously when I was looking at this initially, we were, worried about China production side. But now I think we're really worried about everything as well. And maybe China is a lot better. So it's a big turnaround in what's happening. And maybe I can just give a view about what's happening, at least on our domestic front. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips about domestic food production, but just give you an idea of our agricultural area. It's about 26% of Malaysia's total land area. In terms of arable, which would produce food for people to eat, it's been ranging at pretty much the same since 1961. So it's 750,000 hectares to a million. Now it's about 850,000 hectares. And that's about 10% of agricultural land. So 10% of 8.6 million, which is the earlier figure I mentioned, which is about a quarter of entire Malaysia land area. So 10% agricultural land area and 3% is pasture and meadow. And in contrast, we can compare with oil palm and, previously a lot of that was rubber as well. That's at about 6 million. So if you compare, say, about 1 million against 6 million. Back in the day, it used to be, say, a permanent crop area used to be about only about 2 million. So it's gone from sort of, arable area of about 1 million to 2 million of permanent crop, which would be broadly for export, rubber and then oil palm. And now it's about, very loosely 1:6. So you can see that everyone has gone a lot more into international trade for the food supply chain. And there hasn't been much emphasis on for domestic food. And of course, a lot of our arable produce also goes to places like Singapore.
So, Yuling, those numbers don't really bode well for our food security. In your opinion, do you have any idea on how the outbreak has affected the agri-food supply chains and which sectors are most severely affected?
Well, I think if we look at it on a supply chain basis, I'm a bit more of a sort of midstream and upstream person. So, we do have the example of palm oil. It may not be the food and veg on the supermarket shelf, but maybe this is just an indicative thing, is that essentially this sector in Malaysia's lockdown has got given the go-ahead because essentially you need this, for your catering of your food, to cook your food. And it's also heavily used in what you would buy in the supermarket shelf in terms of prepared and processed foods. So that's got the go-ahead. And of course, unfortunately, there are instances of the virus which is affecting rural areas. So far, what we have news is that Sabah, this news came out yesterday, closed three districts so that they have to, the estates and also the palm oil mills will be closed until month end. Actually, the palm oil mills have a couple of days to get their product out before they have to shut. So this is what we need to watch for, really, is that certain districts, if they do have virus cases, that the government may shut down the whole district for production. So this is palm oil. So So I think on the farm side as well, this has to be very heavily watched because we do have a lot of migrant workers. So we need to have really good care of how they are going to segregate the migrant workers and to take care of the issues and to mitigate the problem of the potential spread of virus there. But if I just go to the food level of things, obviously what happened last week was we had the lockdown and the border with Singapore closed. But essentially, I need to get a bit more clarity into this, but I think food would still continue to be able to move down to Singapore. But of course, on Singapore side, they have been building up their food supply stocks. And from the news there, we understand from the minister's statement that they have 2 to 3 months of food supply. So they have been obviously being careful about this. And I think from the Malaysia front, I think they are obviously considering that Malaysia will also need to secure more because air freight is also being disrupted.
Yes.
Now, increasingly from Europe and other places. I mean, if you go to some of the, especially the Klang Valley and, you know, Penang and Johor supermarkets, you'll see that we have a lot of imported items. And with, you know, increasing air freight issues, you know, we have Emirates, which has said that they are stopping. So that's a huge consideration because actually passenger planes do carry a fair bit of cargo. So we need to see, you know, the air side shifting more to cargo capacity. But, you know, all these things need a bit of adjustment.
Thank you very much, Yu Leng, for speaking with us this morning. And that was Ko Yu Leng of Sergi Enam Advisors, giving us her thoughts on the food security situation here in Malaysia. And, you know, one of the things that the high levels of reliance on imports is one of the things that really does impact our food security levels. I mean, here in Malaysia, we have a tendency to look at food security from a self-sufficiency level of rice area, but that's not the be-all and end-all because we're at about 60% self-sufficiency levels for rice, but it's much lower when you look at other essential crops that most Malaysians do rely on for a significant portion of their diet.
Yeah, I think that that's very important to consider now, especially in a time like this, when you wonder when all supply chains are cut short, where you're going to get your next meal to put on the table.
Absolutely. Now, we are right now heading into the 7:30 news bulletin. And up next, we're speaking with Catherine Dunn-Tempus, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution on the US policy response to COVID-19, as well as what's at stake for President Donald Trump. So that's going to be happening after the 7:30 news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.